This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the W12 podcast. We're on episode 2 of the season. Thank you for joining. I'm Ben Platt. I know it's not an easy listen at the moment, listening to these QPR podcasts. So, you know, thank you for everyone to keep listening. The numbers are going up every week. So, even though it's not going well, people want to listen. So, thank you for that. Before we get into Saturday and the disaster that it was, let me just introduce who we've got on the pod. We've got the ever-present Duncan McCready. And we also welcome back Jack Supple. Jack, I've got a bit of a funny story to tell you, mate. And I haven't even told you. And I want to tell you now. Like, we got a message on one of our socials. And I don't normally interact with them because you never do. You don't want to, but I took the bait this time. So I got a message and it said, "Good pod, lads. Where's Babyface?" And I said, "Thanks. What do you mean by babyface?" And they went, "Jack Supple," in big capital letters. And I put, "Is that the way he looks, or is there a, what do you mean?" And they put, "Both. It's the way he looks." And if you watch wrestling, babyface is a term for someone who is a good guy who taught. He talks relevant sense and is always. it's so funny. And it literally.
Well, for everyone listening, like, Ben's like literally crying with laughter here.
He's a sensible one on the pod. When is he back? Question mark. Mm. So I replied back saying next week. So I'll keep that anonymous. But. I think Jack Babyface Supple probably is going to be your name moving forward.
Well, that's quite the intro, Ben. Thanks for that. I mean,
there's a positive in there, right?
Yeah, I mean, but I think after this Watford post, to use another wrestling term, I hope I don't turn heel.
Yeah. I don't know what that means, but
you go bad.
Be bad, does it? Yeah. All right, okay, cool. Great. Okay. I'm also delighted to welcome Clive from Loft for Words. How are you, Clive? You okay?
Yeah, no, terrific. Every day's a new success. Yeah, so, you know, thanks for having me. Delighted to spend it with you guys. I love to say I never get invited on anyone's podcast when we've just beat someone 3-0. It's like QPR's imploding. Let's get that Loft for Words guy on. This is how I end up on everyone's podcast. So
it's as if we predicted Saturday. It's as if we knew it was coming. But Clive, I've got a quick question for you that I just wanted to start off with. With all the years you've been sort of, you know, writing and speaking about QPR, serious question. Where we are now, where do you rate it of how much trouble we are in compared to how we've been and all the issues that we've had in the past? How much trouble do you think we're in? That kind of makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, obviously financial trouble, we've been way worse. Like when we were going into admin and rattling buckets around and the club was in danger, you know, it's the worst. That team that we put out on Saturday is the worst QPR team I've ever seen.
But
quality wise, standard wise, commitment, like any measure of a football team, that's the worst QPR team that I've ever seen put out. Yeah. But I mean, I've been going since 92. Yeah.
We were in the pub actually before the game, and you know when you're waiting for the team to come out, you kind of forget, and it's 1 minute past or whatever, and we were just chatting and we heard everyone laughing around the pub, and it was like it moved across the pub right to us at the end, and we were like, what's everyone laughing about? We thought someone had fallen over or something had happened. It was the team news that had caused that laughter, and like you say, Clive, which I agree with, which we said, it's the worst team I've seen, I think, on paper for a competitive league game. But anyway, getting into it, Jack, I'll come to you first. I don't know if you can try and pick through what happened on Saturday and what are your views?
Well, I was saying to you guys before the pod, like, I think the first thing I looked at was trying to put that defeat into context, really, where that sits, you know, historically speaking. And it was the first time we'd ever conceded 4 goals in the first half of a season opening game. That's never happened in our league history before. Such was the capitulation. I mean, it's not, you know, it was our heaviest opening day defeat since August 2012. We lost 5-0 to Swansea under Mark Hughes. And outside the top flight, it was the heaviest opening day defeat since August 6, 1965. We lost 6-1 to Brentford in the third division. So, I mean, it's just one of those historical like checkpoints that we seem to be really enjoy putting up in the last few years. You know, they seem to pop up all over the place, records like that. I mean, what I found quite ridiculous, Begovic, first keeper to concede 4 goals in his QPR debut since that August 2012 game where Rob Green conceded 5. He made 9 saves and got in team of the week, Begovic. I don't know. You don't see that, do you? And, you know, when I saw that we switched the game to be an away game for the season opener, obviously that's been really controversial. But when you look at how we start a season when it's away from home, and including the Watford game now, that's just 1 win in 16 away games when the away game's been the season opener. The only win in that run was the Eze Masterclass at Stoke under Warburton. And again, like, you look at Ainsworth and you think, I know he's got a really bad situation on his hands, but the goals we're conceding, the lack of goals we're scoring, I mean, it's 17 goals conceded in 7 away games under Ainsworth. There's a 6 at Blackpool, a 3 at Rotherham, now 4 at Watford. You know, it's just, it's dire. It's really dire. And, you know, you still have that blind optimism and hope start of the season, even though I think a lot of fans this summer are very pragmatic and realistic about where we're at. And a lot of the predictions also showed that in the media. And I can't remember QPR being predicted to be relegated in the Championship for many a year, you know, bottom. That's really shows you how everyone sees us. But 35, 30 seconds to concede, you know, yeah, it was awful. I mean, I could understand some fans leaving after that because it was just in the manner of the goal, the manner of the body language. And then the capitulation is just something we're seeing all too often under Ainsworth, which kind of goes against what he's trying to portray, you know, effort, commitment. There's none of that. It's very worrying.
What, Doug, everything that he said to us when we met him a couple of weeks ago about how the team's going to set up, how they're going to be, you know, the mindset, like Jack mentioned there, I didn't see any of that. I guess my question is, is it all his fault? Or I've kind of, there's a part of me that feels a little bit sorry for him in relation to it's difficult because the same team, he had the same team. You know, it's the same group of players that he's able to put out. I don't know how much of that sits with him. I don't know, trying to be devil's advocate.
I mean, obviously, we can't blame him for the injury crisis at the centre-backs. Like, can we directly blame him for the fact we haven't got a centre-back in? Is that his fault? Is that higher up, like, the board's fault, not getting these deals done? Like, we've all know that back four was shocking, and it's not a back four any manager would pick if he had a fully fit team. So we'll give him the benefit of the doubt with the fact the team selection, he couldn't do much more. But
Isn't he running it, though? Isn't he running it?
That's what I say. You know, everything. He picks that team. He then surely has to drill into those players. All right, we know we're not at our strongest, so we have to be strong as a unit, not individual, strong as a unit. Keep it tight for the first 5, 10, 15 minutes at least. Just be hard to break down. Don't do anything silly. Stay with your runners. Stay in shape. We didn't do that for more than 20 seconds. Literally. The first ball over the top, players were dragged all over the place. Like, Dizel, I don't even know what Dizel was doing. Ozzy, I don't even know what he did. He let his runner go. It was literally like centre-backs went, see you later, massive gap, ball straight over the top. I want to be critical and say Begovic could have done better, but 30 seconds into the game, he's not expecting to be pretty much on a one-on-one.
Yeah,
so absolutely. Well, give him the benefit of the doubt with that.
Clive, I don't know if you've got anything to add to that. And also, what's going on with Chris Willock? What is there? When he spoke to us in all summer, he's telling us he's in the best shape of his life, and we desperately need some sort of attacking presence, and he puts him on the bench for an unfit Paul Smith.
Well, to add to what was said there, and you mentioned, you know, we obviously met him and I did an interview with him a couple of weeks ago, and he said all through the summer that it's going to be difficult. You know, it's going to be backs to the wall. It's going to be a fight against relegation and whatever. And so that's got a few people's backs up. We might come on and talk about that. But in that scenario, if that is the scenario you're going for, that says to me that you're going to play a five and a four in front of it, and you're going to pack it, and you're going to crowd in front of the penalty area, and you're going to sit there and say, right, we'll get through that. You know, Jeff Boycott straight bat stuff, and we're going to survive in the game for as long as you can. You know, that team he picked at the weekend was just wide open. It was wide open from the first minute. Like you say, we conceded after 30 seconds. Dazelle hasn't tracked his runner. Field, all afternoon, Field, who you would think the defence we've got, let's put some people in front of it to protect it as much as we can. You know, like Holloway used to do with Grant Hall. You know, he was so desperate. Put Grant Hall in midfield because he knew the defence behind it was shocking. So you'd think Sam Field could just stand there and do that. But he was like kept journeying out to the left-hand side with his runner and leaving this huge space. Dazelle leaves this huge space. Just absolutely wide open. The stupid thing is we kicked off. Give the ball away, give the free kick and give a goal away within 30 seconds. It was our kickoff. And you just think, if it is backs to the wall and we are in a relegation battle, then set up like that. Like, we saw it at Burnley and Stoke last year. Didn't particularly like it. I don't want QPR to play like that. But at least it's, right, this is what we've got to do today. We need 3 points. Plog it. And that's how we're going to play. There was none of that on Saturday. We were wide open. It doesn't bear any relation to what he's been saying.
Not too sure why Kelman looked well out of his depth. Time he got the ball, he lost it. He was all over the place.
Bless him,
Was it domino? Which was a bit domino, and you had everyone else out of position. I thought it was.
Kelman, and to answer your Willock question, I mean Kelman, bless it, he's come back in great shape as well. He's obviously really tried. This is obviously his big moment to sort of make it at any kind of level before he drifts off. And he was the only one in Austria that had any time of day for the fans. Like the players just didn't want to know the fans out there. And Kelman did at least sort of speak to you and, you know, seem keen and whatever. So I'm desperate for him to do well, but he just looked miles off the level, like you say. Willock and Richards, I mean, you guys, I came on here thinking this will be the bit that I disagree with them over. Like, I think he's right to leave them out. You can't. What have we said about QPR over the past few years? The players don't care. The players are tossing it off. There's no team spirit. They're throwing managers under the bus. They didn't like Critchley. You know, Critchley gone in at Blackpool and started turning that around. Critchley's not a bad manager. They chucked him under the bus. You know, the culture's rotten. And Gareth's big thing at Wickham is building a culture and correcting a culture, which takes time that he's probably not going to get here. But this, you can't correct all of that if you've got players like Richards and Willock who are just tossing it off and refusing to track back. And I don't know if you guys were at Oxford, but the way they played, the way they defended, the way they were jumping out of tackles, the way they were arsing about like it didn't matter. You can't then pick those people next week just because you're desperate and they're your best players and they're your big names and your big earners. Because as soon as you do it, it just destroys everything. Now, you might say there's nothing to destroy. So I take the point, but that was the only bit of Saturday that I thought, yeah, he's right. Like, if they're going to behave like that and play like that, then you can't pick them.
Bringing him on in the 97th minute.
Well, that's just him. That's that, isn't it? That's just him saying that bollocks to you. Like,
it makes you wonder, though, why are we putting out, why are the club putting out, you know, articles about Willock being ready and Ainsworth saying his best shape he's looked in. Why are we bigging him up, saying one thing and then doing the other thing? Because it's the same with the injury, the lack of injury updates, which gets on my nerves. a lot. You know what the QPR squad is. I don't think you're going to get that much of an advantage knowing if Jimmy Dunn's going to play for the next few weeks or not. Like, you know, with threadbare as it is. But that's another thing, because it creates a vacuum and people fill it with their own theories and they've got nothing else to go on. So you can't blame them. But with the Willock stuff, I don't get it. All the noise from the club this summer has been how much he's looking good. He's looking good in training. He's sharp. Obviously, Oxford was a debacle. But it's like we've been told one thing and then the actions are the other. And it's like, I feel like that's a part of the problem at the moment, communication coming out of the club.
Is it almost like they're saying, Willock's fit, come get him? Like, well, we've never seen him in such good shape. Go on, if you want him, come get him now while he's fit. We won't play him. We'll keep him fit for you and healthy for you. We won't risk him just to get him out of the club.
Possibly.
I've stopped listening to them. I mean, the sort of... I know what he's trying to do. Like, he's trying to protect his players. He's trying to keep it all in-house. He's dealing with, like, myriad problems. The place is an absolute catastrophe. Like, it's just a disaster. And he's trying to keep it in-house. But you saw what happened when Critchley brought it out in the open and said, this lot don't care. Their mentality is in the bin. They just chucked him. So I do appreciate what he's doing. I don't understand what he gets out of sitting in a room with us guys on the Thursday and saying, Paul Smith, nothing wrong with him, really. Little bit of a groin. He'll play at Oxford on Saturday. Like, literally 2 days later, we're at Oxford and he's not there. Like, what does he get out of doing? I don't understand what he gets out of doing that. In, like, I've basically stopped listening because they're not telling the truth. Like, he said that he said again on Saturday, the lads gave me everything they've got.
Yeah, he was holding on to a second half performance where Watford had been told at half time, just chill, lads, right? Just chill a little bit. With first game of the season, if that game was any other game of the season, if we were talking mid season or, you know, 2 months down the line, that would have or could have, which probably would have been 6-7-8-0, you know. So, and he's holding on to that as. Which you've got to hold on to something, I guess, but it's just a little bit frustrating. But us fans are listening to it, and we know, you know, we're not stupid. We watch the games. I always find his pre and post press conferences really difficult listens. I always have, even at the start. I know Critchley was a bit morbid in his, but I don't know. I don't know if anyone else finds the same. I end up having to turn it off. And then listen to it again later on in the day. When I'm back ready again, I'll listen to it.
It's the same for me. Yeah, I have to like in stages because you can only take so much of that. Yeah, it's a bit repetitive.
Going back to the Willock, and I mean, the chair's probably a different conversation, but do you think he's trying to push Willock out, not push him out, but he's waiting the centre-back situation to see if we sell him to be able to go and buy... Fornio or a couple of the players that are probably a bit out of our reach, he's holding just to see.
Well, I think like it feels like, yeah, there's certain dominoes that need to fall for other ones to like take place. But like, you know, you just see the players we've been linked with. It's all over 30-year-olds. I mean, these are real just stopgap signings, aren't they? And we've done all that before under McLaren. Didn't always work out that very well in the end, did it? But I guess this is a more dire situation potentially. It is really is needs must. It's just bodies in at this point. But you just wonder, you know, it's a terrible situation to be in. And I just think part of me really wants to like hold on until the end of the window before reserving judgment. But you can't help but not really. You know, the judgment's already there, isn't it? Ainsworth's been here since February. He's had all summer to sort of start churning a squad around, but we look worse.
The problem we have is, as well, if we're waiting for to sell Willock to then get in, say, Firino, like, how long is that? We might not sell him to the end of August. We can't play the whole of August with no fit centre-back. I cannot believe that no one has come in the door since Saturday with how bad we were. No, and we've got Cardiff, which isn't going to be an easy game. We've got no fit centre-backs.
Of Jimmy Dunn being injured, I can't for the life of me understand why no one's come in. And even if someone comes in now, how fit are they going to be for Saturday? People we're talking about have had no pre-season. It's like Colback. They're not. And if they do come in, it's not great for them, is it? Their first game, unfit, come in, we lose 3 or 4. It's just not a good start, is it, for anyone? It doesn't help anyone.
It's the reason that Jack has given, that we're in an FFP situation where you are having to wait for someone to go before we can do anything. We can't even pay 400,000 for Chris Firino. I think, you know, I noticed the Wickham manager in his interview at the weekend, they got beat at home, and he said Firino's had his head turned, you know, his head wasn't in the right place. I think we're basically trying to sort of bully Wickham down to only charging us 150,000. Basically, that's the situation we're in, because the FFP headroom is not there until somebody leaves. And let's also be perfectly honest about it, Chris Firino is not very good. Like, if you think Firino is going to come in here and we're going to, that's suddenly going to be fine. Like, the players we're signing, Morgan Fox, he's not very good. Like, that's the level that we're shopping at. So we're sort of desperate to get Steve Cooking, Jack Colback, you know, these players, man. Like, if you think this is going to help greatly, I don't know what to say to you. Like, Josh Knight from Peterborough is, you know, he's basic, man. He's the basic footballers that we're sort of desperate for. But it's the reason that Jack said there's so little FFP headroom that they need someone else to need. Still, one of the good players we do have has got to go before we can do anything.
Have you got like a layman's term, like quick summary of how bad or where we are from an FFP? I know the numbers are out there, but just a quick, like, how close to the line are we? Like, how many would even selling Willock for 800,000, 900,000, a million do anything? Would that still mean we can't buy anyone?
Yeah, probably. I mean, like I say, if you can't pay £400,000 for Chris Firino from Wickham, that shows you how right on the edge we are. And also, like, if you come to talking about whether you're going to replace Ainsworth, you know, you've got, it would probably cost you that to pay him off. So you've got, that's another sort of question to come on to. But this, the simple things you've got to remember with FFP are it's a rolling 3-year period. It never resets. Yeah. You don't do 3 years and then start another 3 years. It's a rolling 3-year. You're allowed to lose £39 million in that 3 years. We've been fine for a little while now because we sold Eze. So we recorded a loss in that season of £4 million. With your disallowable costs that aren't counted towards FFP, it basically meant we lost zero. So that's brilliant while that's in your 3-year cycle. But whatever we lose this season is replacing that in our 3-year cycle. The Eze sale has gone. What hasn't gone is the £25 million we lost trying to get promoted under Mark Warburton. And I know everybody says, how do we lose all that? You know, we didn't spend transfer fees. We did a little bit. You know, those loans, Andre Gray is expensive. Sam McCallum is expensive. You know, and teams in our division don't breach FFP with transfer fees. They breach it with wage bill. So, you know, we had a wage bill of £28 million that season. You can't do it. We've got the £25 million loss still in our 3-year. The Eze sale has gone, so you now have to this season basically lose the same amount of money you did when you sold a player for 20 million quid. So if you can't sell another player for 20 million quid, you've basically got to find 20 million pounds somewhere else, and that's by selling players and just hacking the wage bill down like so aggressively to the point that we've now got a team on the pitch that isn't even a League One team, in my opinion.
It's depressing, this thing, isn't it? Like, the whole FFP thing, I feel like it just really affects Championship clubs and doesn't, like, the Premier, look at Premier League teams, and they just seem, because they've got the sponsorship deals, it's so much bigger than all of ours. It just doesn't seem to be a fair playing field.
Yeah, even it's there to keep idiot scum like us in our place, and you know, the bigger clubs just get further and further away. That's what it's there for, but you know, it is what it is. Those are the rules. There are other clubs in the Championship. I look at Cardiff and think, how are they complying with the signings they're making and things like that? There's stuff like that that I don't understand. But, you know, it is where we are. And, you know, people say the board need to spend money, show ambition and all of that. It's just simple maths. They can't. I'm sure they would absolutely love to go out and sign 10 players. This board, you know, but that's how we've got into this trouble again, because the first chance they had after they sold Eze, they went out and signed loads of players, and that's how we've ended up back here. That's, you know, that is what this board does. That's the other thing I'm worried about now, like, when you bring it, we're so desperate. You're bringing in stopgaps. Jack called them stopgaps. Jack Colback, Jesus, I nearly called him Stephen Colker there. Can you imagine? you're bringing Jack Colback in, but you're having to give him a 2-year deal with a third year option. He's 34 next month. So you're already creating further problems. Like, we've just had to pay Stefan Johansson off. You're creating a problem for yourself again next summer or the summer after, where you're going to have Jack Colback on a contract you don't want him on, possibly in the division below. but we're now having to do that just to get them through the door. It's like,
to maneuver in this market, we've obviously still got a sell, a chair, a field. I mean, as you said, the fee for Willock probably won't touch the sides, but someone like Sam Field, you see rumours today online, Rangers, Burnley. I mean, I wouldn't really trust the Football Insider. You know, it's not Bible, is it? They're quite like hit and miss, I find, with their rumours. But, you know, I just think, like, with Sam Field, what's his contract situation? Do we have an option, or is it running out next summer?
Because... Don't know if we've got an option. 1 year, don't know if we've got an option. Basically, every deal we ever do seems to have an option on it. But again, you're not allowed, you know, they never tell you. We're not allowed to know. So...
Yeah,
but yeah, if he's only got 1 year left, then you're immediately setting that at a certain price level. I don't know what to say. I'm trying to find something optimistic to say, but there just isn't anything. Like,
this is the problem, isn't it? It's constant every single time, every single summer. We've got a player. We're saying, how have they got down to the last year of the contract? And we've got no bargaining position. But it happens every summer.
Yeah,
like, why are we not getting these contracts renewed properly? Then we give Nico Hamalainen a 6-7 year deal. It doesn't make sense to me. Like, the whole strategy around that, the running of the club in that aspect, just makes no sense. It feels like we've got a kid running it.
Well, I think like Chair was the last one he did properly, because he's still got a couple of years and he's still in a position where his numbers are good from last year. He could probably get a top six championship club, or even like a Luton, for example, in the Prem, is in that sort of bracket maybe. I think other than that, if Field's contract does run out, less than a year, we've got no bargaining power there. It's Chair or bust, isn't it? In more ways than one.
How did we get Linda Dykes to sign a contract? is another question I've got. I don't know what we've given him, or what we've said to him, but I'm kind of still in shock about that.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah,
no idea. Trickery.
I think it's like Ainsworth said, wasn't it? He told us he wants to build a team around Dykes, a bit like Scotland do. Like, did he sell him that dream? Did he say, we've let Steph go, I can give you a bit more of his wages to top yours up?
We still haven't, I imagine this is probably bottom of the list, but we still haven't resolved the fact that we haven't got enough strikers. You look at, I watched the games on Sunday, right? And I looked at Cardiff, we were under a transfer embargo. I looked at their bench and I thought, wow, they've got Robinson, Grant, that Akpo looks good. It's just... In Ipswich, they started three strikers away at Sunderland. We've just got Lyndon Dykes. I know Armstrong and Kelman, but they're not your second or even, third options, really, should they?
Cardiff are one of the clubs I don't understand how they're qualifying under FFP. I don't get it, signing Aaron Ramsey and stuff like that. Ipswich have done what Sunderland did. The FFP rules are much more favourable in League One, and they've used that to build a championship team that can just come into the championship and carry and kick on with a couple of loans. So,
I think, and I thought this when I was listening to Gareth a couple of weeks ago, was I think that although he's happy we stayed up, I don't think Gareth Ainsworth would have been too unhappy if we'd have gone down last season. He was rebuilding, doing this job in League One. I think it would have been easier for him, because yes, we would have probably definitely lost maybe the chairman, but I actually think that would benefit him. He'd have a bit more, do you know what I mean? The pool of players would be slightly different, but it'd be an easier job for him. I don't know if anyone else agrees or disagrees.
You can spend what you like in League One, as long as you don't leverage the debt against the club, which is what our owners do anyway. They write the debt off, but the rules are different in the Championship. So he would have things to spend. I don't disagree with what you said, to be honest. No.
I know the spin to the fans is, it's great we stayed up, amazing, fists in the air at Stoke and Burnley, but I just wonder whether in the back of his head, or him and Dobson are sat in a room going, will be a lot tougher this year. We won't get anywhere near as enough time. And like someone said earlier, we can wait until August and see where we are. I'll imagine we probably will bring in 4 or 5 players, but it could be too late for him, really. If he loses his first 5 games of the season, it's going to be tough for him.
Well, on your point about, the strikers, and obviously we all know that's the most expensive position to replace, but... we haven't scored more than 2 goals in a single game since well, nearly 10 months at Cardiff, at home against Cardiff. 33 games we've gone since we haven't scored more than twice in a game. So, you know, that is, the goals have dried up well and truly. But then, as you say, you look at our options, they're just not there. And two thirds of them, you know, and Armstrong's got potential, very raw. And Kelman looks, you know, apparently a great finisher, as we keep being told, but he's never in a scoring position in a real live game for us, from what I've seen just yet. They're not championship standard strikers. So, and Dyke, and we know Dykes. I mean, look, his one-on-one against Watford. You know, he's in, and he's done it before. He telegraphs what he's going to do, and then he mishits it. And I think he's a really good, you know, he's a really hard-working striker. He's on his day, a real handful, but he's never been a source of goals. I think 12 is his best season for us. So, yeah. I mean, you talk about Ainsworth, and he could be in trouble, but as Clive pointed out, if we can't afford Chris Firino from Wickham, or, you know, Knight from Peterborough, how are we going to afford to pay off someone like Ainsworth? You know, was it a 3-year deal as well?
You won't have to pay that 3-year. No. There will be a settlement amount. There will be a settlement amount in there, but I'd be amazed if it was less than 400,000. So, like, I think it is a concern. Like, I'm not even sure they'd be able to afford to sack him. Like, plus, you know, what's the first question any new manager coming to a club is going to want to know, other than his own salary? Yeah, he's going to want to know how much there is to spend, like, because he's going to want to bring his own players. And, you know, and the answer here is basically zero, but less than zero, because you've still got to sell somebody else. Like, so that immediately sets the caliber of manager that you would get here. So I think we only managed to get Ainsworth because he obviously wanted the job for his whole life. You only managed to get in someone of that caliber because of that.
And I know the players weren't having Critchley. Would you ever feel would be better off long term if we'd kept Critchley? Because it was, I mean, I think the Sheffield United game, the last minute goal we conceded, was a bit of a sliding doors moment. I think, like, we, you know, that would have been a really good win. And that was a bit devastating to concede that late into the game. But he's not a bad manager. But was he just the wrong fit for QPR? I mean, the players weren't having him, were they? So
what about the other way? We got Gareth Ainsworth in instead of Critchley at the point we got Critchley in. Would that have made any difference? I don't know.
No.
Well,
for Critchley, for me, is a better manager than Ainsworth. Like, even, like, the problem is Critchley threw the players under the bus, and our group of players don't like it. They can't handle that criticism. They don't like it.
I enjoyed that press.
That's why Beal kind of came in and, like, put his arm around all the lads and, like, you're all amazing, we're going to get promoted, you're the best players in this league. And they all went, hello, are we? Happy days. And that's why we started the season so well. Then as soon as it gets a little bit tough, like, our players just crumble. As soon as you give them any kind of criticism, they don't like it, throw the toys out the pram. And this is the problem with modern day football. They're so, like, pampered in the academies. They don't realise how hard it is anymore, because they're not on YTS contracts where they're getting 20 quid a week. There's 16-year-olds that are on 500, 600, 700 quid a week in academies. Like, they don't know the hardship that players 15 years ago had, 20 years ago had.
I mean, you're right that our players just do not cope with adversity or criticism at all. They're like little kids. And you can't afford to be like that when you're not very good. Because, like, if you've got the ability to cover it up, then that's fine. But they just haven't. They're not very good footballers. You know, we can talk about André Dazel on Saturday. I mean, you could pick any one of them from Saturday. But I just look at him mooching around like football owes him a living. And, like he's going to get another club. Like he's all sort of above it. I can't play my diags here. I can't play my through balls here. This is all a bit beneath me, and I'll get another club because I'm André Dazel and I've got this great reputation. That's what he looks like to me. But, you know, I could pick anybody out of our team. That's how I feel about Willock and Richards. That's how I felt about Laird and Roberts last year. Like, you know, the only thing I would say is that these footballers are behaving like people in football don't notice and don't talk to each other. And you look at Laird. When we signed Laird last summer, I was like, that is the best right back we could have got. Like, age profile, brilliant at Swansea, his numbers were through the roof. I couldn't believe we got him, and within a year he's gone to, you can go to Birmingham for 500,000, because people do notice when you're behaving like that. So I think all of these players that are currently mooching around and, oh, we don't like how Ainsworth plays, we didn't like Critchley either. Like, you know, are you just going to do this until you get someone you like? And do you think that the rest of football is not noticing? The reason we haven't got offers for Chair, Willock, you know, these players we need to sell is because the rest of football is looking at this. Critchley said it himself when he was at Blackpool. The rest of the Championship knew QPR were mentally weak and were a team could get at. So why would people be in a rush to sign these players? I think they need a reality check. Like,
we've heavily invested on Dzeko. He's on a fair bit, I think, for his quality, and we've spent £1 million on him. I don't know whether that's impacted him. One player that obviously I like, but I'm worrying looking at him on Saturday that he's been infected with this, is Kenneth Powell. He's got away with a bit. He was really poor on the first half, really poor. A lot of the issues came down that left side. He just didn't look like the Kenneth Powell. Definitely, you know, even towards the end, he was still half decent.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Like, you know, so I don't know if anyone else noticed that. Or,
well, yeah,
it's just, I guess, an infection, isn't it?
It just spreads. Well, sorry to interrupt. I was just going to say, I think a disinterested Chair, you know, in front of him, you know, looked like he couldn't be arsed in the first half, you know, offering no protection, to the point where you've got Sam Field vacating the middle to go and give Powell some protection. And Powell's our best fullback. So that's obviously Field seeing the danger. But then what that does, because we're only playing two central midfielders and then asking a lot, let's be honest, give Kelman a bit of credit, asking a lot to ask him to drop in, form a third centre midfielder and try and like lead, you know, help lead the press and fill the spaces. And when Dzeko can't be asked to track anyone, just, you know, meanders about, and you've got Field trying to do the running of two people, it leaves all these open spaces. And I just think, I worry. Ainsworth is not getting the best out of Chair. Clearly Warburton and Bill did. And that's a very, you know, specific style. It's, you know, the team was built around him. We're trying to bypass him in under Ainsworth.
Looks completely checked out to me. Completely checked out, absolutely desperate for his phone to ring between now and August. But again, like, people are watching, they're seeing what's going on at QPR. Like, his numbers are through the roof. And, you know, I love Ilias Chair. I think he's our best player. You know, until recently has been trying his heart out, probably deserves a move and whatever, but I just can't believe anybody would watch a QPR game at the moment and want any of the players. But he just looks like he's already on, you know, his bags are packed and he's ready to go to me. Like,
well, I think an ex-colleague of mine at Opta, Matt Furness, he's a Watford season ticket holder, and he was there, and usually we give each other a bit of, you know, grief over the games. And we've had a good record against Watford in recent, you know, seasons. But he gave a pretty honest assessment, to the point where I think he felt sorry for us a little bit. He was just like, why is Ainsworth not even trying to incorporate Chair or Willock in the game? The fullbacks, you know, so out of their depth. You know, he just said it's an absolute mess. Any manager that's at QPR and isn't trying to get the best out of Chair and then maybe Willock, we know the situation with Willock, but this is from an outsider looking in, is insane.
Yeah.
So, you know, and let's be honest, like, they're the players that are going to win your games. I think we can all agree with that as fans, having seen us over the last few years. I don't get it. And this is my biggest bugbear. You know, we've got a good manager will try and get the best out of what he's got and play to their strengths, not enforce a style on a team that's not set up for it. So that's my main concern.
Another thing I noticed on Saturday was, I can't remember what minute it was, we were 3-0 down and the board went out or someone was injured. And the Watford manager, he had all of his players around, barking orders at him. Literally had three or four players around him doing this, pointing. I looked at Gareth Ainsworth, and he wasn't at that point. He should be shouting at people, "Do this, do that," giving instructions, and he was just not doing anything. So, you know, you can read more into that probably than it is, but it's just.
After the second goal, he had his head in his hands anyway. We went to, as soon as they scored the second, he was there at the touchline like this. Like, already didn't have a clue what he was doing from that point. Like, he made a big comment about being stronger from defensive set pieces. We had every single player in our box for corners. We had no out, even if we won the first ball, which we didn't win. We didn't win a first ball. And then we let the third goal came from a corner. I think it was Ilias or Kenneth got out-jumped at the front near post.
Smith.
They're not going to win Smith. I knew it was one of our shorter players. But, like, do you know what I mean? They weren't going to win a header. So why have him in the box? Why not leave some players further up the pitch for an outlet? That means Watford can't put as many players in the box. Like, Watford's goalkeeper from the first half was playing as a CDM. He literally was. I think he had two touches in his own box.
Yeah.
All his other touches were literally like near enough the halfway line.
And Gakia, their right back, was just able to step into midfield completely. Nobody went with him. Suddenly there's an extra midfield and we're already outnumbered there. It was the maddest setup I think I've ever seen for a football game. You've had all summer to plan for that match. And that is the setup you came up with. It blows my mind. Have you seen the comments from the Watford centre-back today? Is it
Porter? Quite. I saw that
in the Watford Observer. He's like, he literally said, "I don't know if QPR have watched me have a bad game or whatever, but could not believe how much time and how many touches and how many passes they let him and Hoyt play out from the back." And that's what the opposition are saying. They literally couldn't believe what they were facing.
Like, there seemed to be no shape, no press. It was just like, get everyone on the 18-yard box and just let Watford have the ball and do what they want. But then all of a sudden, someone would move, there'd be a massive space, and they'd play for us.
This is the thing. If we were pressing, like, we're going to press, okay, fine, I can see that. You know, or if you're just going to sit everyone back, you're going to try and be really defensive and defend your penalty area, it's okay, I can see that. But it was neither. We neither attacked nor defended. We neither pressed nor sat off. We just sort of stood and watched it all go on around it. It was insane. I'm so pleased that Watford called the dogs off at half time, because that could have been. I was sitting there thinking, if this keeps going at this tempo and this pattern, this is going to be 8-9 maybe. I've never seen such a hopeless mismatch and such a mad setup.
It didn't change though. At any point in the first half, I don't know.
His comment in his post-match, Ben, about, we made a tactical switch at half time. Is it just me that thinks maybe that the time for that is when you're 2-0 down? Not four. I will give it till half time. You're 4-0 down, Carrot. I love him, but it's hard, isn't it? It's bloody hard when he's saying things like that and doing things like that. It's mad.
How many times have we seen an elite manager be 2-0 down after 20 minutes, and at 25 minutes they make a sub? They change the game straight away, even in the first half. They don't even wait till half-time. I just don't get it. I don't get what the whole thinking was. We could have brought on Duke McKenna earlier, put three in midfield, made it a bit more compact. I just don't understand anything.
Well, go to the shape that we played in the second half. You could have done that at 2-0 down. Like you just said, Duncan, I think it was, there was a stoppage.
Yeah.
You know, there was a stoppage and Watford got round their manager and whatever. So there was an opportunity to do something there. And we're just like, oh, no, we'll give it till half-time. I think we were lucky to only be 4-0 down at half-time. I mean, Begovic, Jack said, got in the team of the week.
I'm trying to find a positive. One positive I wrote down was Armstrong again, hustling and bustling and just causing problems here and where he could. I don't know why Ainsworth isn't just, he may as well just put him in and see how he does. If he doesn't score for a few games, fine, but I can't imagine that fans are going to be unhappy. I won't be if he puts him in, whether it's with Dykes up there and, do you know what I mean? Try and, if we're going to play it long, at least we've got a bit of an outlet. He might cause a mistake. He might do something. So I thought that was a positive. I didn't know if anyone else has got any or
Yeah, I think on the topic of Dizel.
Here he is, babyface.
He wasn't the positive. It was more Duke McKenna did more in that second half than I think I've seen Dizel do, bar that one assist at, was it Cardiff, whoever it was, a few seasons ago.
Yeah, he's got an oil painting of that on his wall.
Yeah, he's lived off of that. He's probably expecting a new contract soon for it. But like one assist in his whole QPR career or something stupid like that. But
yeah, one assist and no goals.
Yeah. And I think Duke McKenna, he just showed you a bit of effort, a bit of application. He's actually quite a tidy footballer. He's not that bad a footballer. I think he's in with a shout as an option to replace someone like Dizel, whether Ainsworth will. I don't know. I would have thought three in midfield against Cardiff is an absolute must. So maybe you bring in a Duke McKenna just to pack it, make him rat around a bit and just, you know, hustle and bustle, see if we can get some turnovers. And if you're going to play Armstrong, you've got that counter-attack threat. You could have Armstrong and Smith with pace if you want to drop, you know, but I'm not saying drop chair. But those are options, I guess. And if you, and that point you made about corners, everyone back in the box. Under Warburton, we used to have like Eze and Wright, say Samuel on the counter. You know, if you've got someone of Armstrong's pace and Smith's pace, leave them out. You know, leave them outside the box. That's your outlet, you know, to just release that pressure valve. If your back's to the walls, as we truly are, you need those options in the game. And it's just, you're just seeing real, for me, I'm not a football expert or anything like that, but just real basic things that would just help the team. Why aren't we doing? You know, we can all see it. But in terms of positives, yeah, I think, you took it, you know, Armstrong absolutely night and day was the one bright spot. Begovic got on the team of the week, lads.
But like the one thing you could say, like if you want to be optimistic and look for a positive, conservative estimate, seven of those players on Saturday won't be playing, you would hope, by the first game in September because, and don't laugh, you've got Jake Clark-Salter to come back in. Jimmy Dunn to come back in, Jack Colback to come back in. You would think at some point he's going to have to swallow like whatever it is and pick Willock at least. Possibly Richard. You've got to hope that those two respond. Like you must be embarrassed. If you can't get in that team, you've got to, there must be some pull your finger out embarrassment. And look, you know, there probably will be some signings. It's QPR. They always make signings. So, you know, whether it's Steve Cook or a free transfer or whatever, probably one or two arrivals, a loan at right back. So immediately there, what have I got to? Seven there. Like, you would hope that team would look very different. Still not very good, but better than that, you know, by the end of the month. Like, at least seven of them, you would think, from that team won't be playing by the end of the month. You know, and then obviously Jake Clark-Salter will get injured again. But you know, it'll be nice to see him for the 20 minutes we get him at Middlesbrough or wherever that is.
Is he back? Jimmy Dunn is not going to be back for a while. I don't think. I think again that's another mind games.
Yeah, it does my head in that we're not allowed to know. Like it's expensive. Yeah, it's expensive following QPR, and it's really difficult at the minute. And people are getting aggy about it. And you're just getting tracked like little kids. Like,
well, what manager is sat there, you know, looking at the game going, Clark Salt is back or not playing. I'm going to have to change everything, my approach to it. Like, it's not going to happen. They don't do that, do they?
Do you remember when Bielsa managed in this league? I know it's an extreme example, but would name his team, sometimes just name his team in the press conference on the Thursday. Just go, yeah, that's what we're going to play. Deal with it. it's just... I don't get the advantage that we think we're gaining by playing all cloak and dagger about maybe Jimmy Dunn's gonna play or not. It really worked on Saturday, didn't it? Our big sort of surprise witness was Paul Smith, and that worked an absolute treat. So you know, it's really working this technique. Yeah. So,
someone mentioned it that day, and it was a really good point actually, and one that we're being enforced to is that we are like. I mentioned it earlier about we are ruining players because we're having to play them like Gubbins now. Like I don't know if he's ever going. Like I know it was his opportunity, but it was probably the worst opportunity he could have wanted to make his first appearance in. Right, and he's probably never going to come back from that. Right, and he's just one of a few people who you know. I don't know how long Paul Smith's going to have. I don't like if he has a really bad start, really quickly, and it's just not ideal for him to be frustrated. You know what I mean? Like. And Gareth Ainsworth picked him up quite a lot. Said he's going to have a great season. He's going to cause problems. He's going to do this. He's going to do that. And
what would really help, like desperate, is if you just had three or four players from the academy that could were capable of doing 12 or 15 games this year. And apart from Armstrong, there's nobody within 1,000 miles of it. And like you just said, you know, I don't want to slag Joe Gubbins off or whatever, but you all saw it on Saturday. There's nobody from that academy that is anywhere within 1,000 miles of our first team. And that's a real problem you've got with the FFP situation we talked about, because it would not help if you just had three or four people who could give you a dozen games at a reasonable level, and we've got nobody. I can't believe there hasn't been greater turnover of the staff at the top of that academy, particularly with Les resigning. There must be some serious questions asked of Chris Ramsey, Paul Hall, Alex Cow. You've got all of these people basically at the top of the academy doing the same job. Where's the product from that? Where is the result from that? We are absolutely desperate for just somebody that can step out of the academy and do 12 games for us.
It's like Norwich. I don't know if you've seen it, but that new young lad just out of nowhere. His name's Rowe.
Yeah.
He's just gone on and scored a wonder goal on the first day of the season. No one knew about him last season. I was reading about it earlier. Had a good pre-season. Just come in first game and just scored a worldie. He could have scored three or four, apparently.
Well, that's it. Norwich had like Rowe and Eder, both from their academy. They won 2-1. Both goals came from their academy. You look at Bristol City. They got four or five. They're about to sell one for 25 million. You know, I mean, this is how you do it. I mean, so it's, and how much, I dread to think how much money's been spent on all the staff and, you know, the infrastructure and everything like that. And they're talking about, you know, how great the training ground is. And, you know, they've got, we need to start putting through, you know, where are these young players? Where, you know, how long do they need? You know, why?
Their defence, and you'll have seen it in the interview that we did with Les last year, is that they've lost 13 players. 13 players have been poached for £700,000 over the past few years under the EP3. And that, you know, that's the reason that the, you know, it's half a defence, I guess. But Paul Hall is now on the bench for the first team. He's never sort of gone back since he was caretaker manager. And like we see Chris Ramsey on the train back from all the first team away games. He's always sort of further down the carriage, but if it, is he meant to be, what is he meant to be doing? Is he not meant to be watching the academy games? What is he doing traveling to the first team games? What is he contributing for his salary for doing that? I'm it's one of the many things that mystifies me at the moment at QPR. Like, if you're skint, start behaving like you're skint. Why have you got these people kicking around on presumably decent salaries, not producing anything?
I look around at the Championship as well, and I know it's only one game, and I know, but I look at squads and I look at teams and I think, what three teams are going to finish below us? I had to do that last week
for the season preview, and I don't believe it. I think we're finishing last. I think it's the just, but I came up with Sheff Wed, Rotherham, and Huddersfield, but I don't believe it. Like, I don't believe it.
I saw some people say Cardiff, but then I looked at their front four at least.
No way.
Well, bloody hell.
They look pretty good to me. I watched that game. They look
Bowler's an inspired signing, you know, and you think you've got Carlin Grant on the left, and you had Ugbo up front, look pacey, held the ball up, got a goal. Aaron Ramsey, not for me, but like those three signings, you know.
Well, they haven't.
You couldn't dream of that. And that goes back to Guy's point. How are they complying with FFP doing that? But,
well,
yeah.
I was speaking to a Cardiff fan yesterday and asked him that exact question. And his answer was, and I don't know how true this is, that they haven't spent anything. They haven't had any money because the owner has had all his assets frozen. And also, whatever, is it the leisure industry in wherever he's from, has been really poor because of COVID, which has carried on a lot longer than here. But this last year, it's all opened up and his income and he's earning. So that's why they've paid off the fees for Nantes. They paid that off like a few weeks ago. He's invested back into Cardiff again, so hence why they, you know, I know they can't afford to buy fees. They're not allowed to. But he's just like say offering wages and bigger wages and bonuses to clubs and stuff like that that they can do still. Apparently, so that's how. So I don't know how true that is, but it looks like that's fairly true.
Do we think Gubbins is going to have to mark that Ugbo kid on Saturday? I watched him against Leeds on Saturday, and I'm like from behind the sofa almost watching him crawl over Liam Cooper all afternoon and thinking, What are we going to mark him with?
One other question I've got, which is always a one, I always forget to talk about it, is what do our scouts do? Do we have scouts?
Scouts.
Recruitment scouts or opposition scouts?
Recruitment scouts. Do we have any?
Yeah, I mean, there's a whole recruitment. There's a whole recruitment department there led by a head of recruitment and a data analytics and whatever. And they seem to be going down that path for a while. Coming back to the Critchley point, at least sort of Critchley followed on from Beale, who followed on from Warburton. They were quite similar appointments. And we seem to be going down that line more. Younger players, you know, data analysis, recruitment. And then last summer, you basically, Beale agreed to come as long as you didn't sell Chair, Dieng and Willock, and as long as he could basically bring loads of his boys with him. And you should have just said no to that all the way through. But at least the Critchley appointment sort of follows on from Beale. Now you've gone for completely different stylistic manager and you're just letting him make it Gareth Ainsworth FC, like just signing Morgan Fox and people like that.
The club thought that that Ainsworth, we said this on the pod recently, that his motivation, his persona, his positivity would rub off on the players. He'd get the results they were needed. We'd get to the summer and we'd sell someone for a bigger money than what we have. I think that was what they thought would happen. But we can't sell Chair, really. No one's coming in for him, are they? Not for the money that we would want to sell him. Same with Willock. We've sold Dickey and Dieng. I mean, they were £4, £5, £6 million players a few seasons ago easily. So I just think that's all contributed to the mess we're in now.
If you were to get rid of Gareth, though, and like I say, with no money to spend, it sort of sets your calibre of replacement. Are you going to go and get a replacement that plays a similar style? Are you then going to have someone coming in and trying to teach Morgan Fox to like play out from the back? Like,
well,
because that's what we've done. We've gone completely the other direction. Like, all the babies, all the bathwater everywhere. Right, we're just going to go. We're going to be Gareth Ainsworth FC, and he's going to sign all the players, and this is how we're going to play.
Yeah, but, I mean, the board would need some sort of, you know, they would need to hold tight if we have a really poor start, because you can't have what we had with Critchley, because that was just, they should have moved Critchley on quicker than they did, really, but they didn't. But you don't want that situation again, do you? Where we're just losing every week. There's nothing there. There was nothing there with Critchley, was there? The players had gone. The fans had gone. He had to have gone. I don't know.
Doesn't this always fall back as well to why we haven't got a director of football anymore? And isn't the director of football's job to make sure the club has a philosophy and that managers come into that philosophy, not we hire managers and we go with their philosophy?
That's meant to be it, yeah.
Yeah.
That's meant to. My problem with, and look, we've just spoken about the lack of people coming out the academy and Chris Ramsey and whatever, that's on Les, you know, and, you know, you can criticise him for that. My big problem with the director of football is we sort of had it, but we didn't have the system in full, because as you've just said, exactly that. If you've got a director of football and Mick Beale comes in and says, well, I'm only coming if you don't sell those three players and I'm allowed to bring in five of my own. Under a director of football system, you just laugh at that. You're just like, well, absolutely not. And, yeah. You know, what happens too often still at QPR is we go along with the director of football for a while, but then Tony Fernandez turns up and tells you you're going to appoint Steve McLaren. Or, you know, last year we're going along, right, Beale similar to Warburton, Critchley similar to Beale, but it's not going very well. Amit turns up and says, right, you're getting Gareth Ainsworth. And it's like, that's not how the director of football is meant to work. You've now got a situation where literally it just seems to me that it's, like I say, Gareth Ainsworth is turning it into Gareth Ainsworth FC. Like,
well, he said that he's in control of everything when we were there. I don't know.
Yeah, he did. Yeah. Terrifying. Yeah. He said that as if it was a positive. And
yeah.
And I was sitting there. I was sitting there with Jack at the back. Just that, oh my God.
And you know, it's about that director of football, there was a lack of clarity in what he was responsible for the whole time in his tenure, whether that's just to protect him in the job or other people around him and how everyone made the decisions, or a lack of standards at the club. But like, they didn't commit to that strict of a director of football role, did they? Because you said about Beale, that's correct. Under Warburton, we signed Wallace, John Ball, Odabaggio, Andre Gray.
Yeah.
Players that Warburton's boys from his old clubs, Watford, Brentford, etc. So how much of that scouting was taking place back then? Back to your point, Ben. We've got you know, a recruitment department, but are the managers that we employ listening to them, and are they overruling them and just picking the players they want? You know, Bill was a prime example of that. He seemed to know everybody that came in, you know, suspiciously. So, no, now it's even worse. You know, allowing, you know, Ainsworth to have free reign and look at, you know, again, I feel like, do they nip it in the bud? Can they afford to nip it in the bud? Is this a complete disaster, train wreck, or do they let Ainsworth build a team as much as he can in his image and then hope for the best until January, or if he makes it that long? Wait, you know, what are the alternatives if they want to get rid of him further in the season? Warnock? You know, God, you're going around in circles. So you
we can't get Warnock.
He didn't seem asked about being Huddersfield. I'm only there because I'm doing a favour to the chairman. It would be bad if someone else took over with these lads. You know, typical Neil Warnock self-preservation stuff. But, like, you know, he don't seem super happy to be there either.
My big problem if we give Ainsworth the summer, get to the end of August, he's brought in the players he wants, and we're still rock bottom. We've lost all five games, haven't scored. We're about minus 20 in goal difference. Like, then what are we doing? We already could be right off the pace.
That's the biggest issue though with the club, isn't it? Is we're so reactive and we're not proactive. I always say it. It's always like something's a surprise to us when it happens. Like, and that's a scenario which could very well happen. So I'd expect the board to be going, right, well, what do we do? Do we hold tight? And I guess it all depends on the manner of the defeats as well, doesn't it? If you start losing like 4-5-0, that changes everything, doesn't it? Really, if you play well and lose 1-0 away at Southampton, it's not so bad, is it? Really, you know.
Did you see the article about the Bloomberg article about QPR apparently looking for investors? Obviously, in the post Fernandez.
Yeah.
And speaking of the investors, you just wonder, like, Richard Riley came in and we've been absolutely terrible since he started investing in the club, and he's probably thinking, what have I been sold here? You know.
I heard that he was increasingly involved this summer, probably because he's got the same question that you asked there, Jack. What the hell have you done with my investment? Like, we were fourth in the championship when he bought 8% or whatever. So I've heard that Bloomberg article about QPR seeking buyers. Honest to God, like, if someone had offered to buy the club from Ruben at any point over the last 8 years, he'd have just handed the keys over. But the amount of sort of money still owing on various things, it would probably cost you sort of £60 million just to get the keys to the place. And like, why on earth? And then straight away, you're into the situation where the club loses 1.8 million a month. That's how much it costs to run. And you've still got the same FFP problem. You can't buy players. You can't just go and buy players unless, you know, I've seen increasingly people just saying, well, you know, let's just ignore it again. Let's just go and spend because the team needs, obviously, refurbishment. Let's just ignore it. I mean, would not advise, but I have that point of view is going to grow over the next couple of weeks. If we lose the next couple of games, people are going to be saying in the last week of the transfer window, just ignore FFP, sign the players we need. You'll see that over the next couple of weeks. Like I say, would not advise.
It was already in my mind, actually. I was thinking of this yesterday, thinking, why don't we just spend? Well, looking at some of these clubs that have had fines and points deduction, Birmingham, there's a few I can name. Is it getting a 6 points deduction, how, as opposed to being rock bottom all season?
Yeah, I mean, I saw someone, it was a good line, I saw someone tweet the other day that we're basically taking a 25 point deduction to avoid a 6 point exactly deduction. That's kind of how it feels.
Yeah,
I think what people have got to bear in mind on that is it's not just you get 6 points taken off, you shake hands and walk away. There's all sorts of other bits to the punishment. Like, You will be put under a business agreement with the Football League that you have to get your losses down to a point before you're allowed to do anything. Like, you will have to sell all of your players for whatever offers you get. You will be under a transfer embargo for multiple transfer windows until you get your losses down. And that would be very bad for us because we lose money hand over fist because of Loftus Road and various other things. So it wouldn't be we get 6 points deducted and it's fine. It would be you get 6 points deducted, another 6 points next year if you don't make the business plan. You have to sell everything you've got. You're not allowed to buy. We look at our squad. What does it need? It needs fullback, centre back, centre mids. It needs everything. Centre forwards. It needs everything apart from a bloody goalkeeper, basically. But you'd be trying to rebuild the squad while having to get rid of everything you've got for no money at all and be under a transfer embargo, you're only allowed to bring free transfers in. So you just have the situation you've got at Reading where your team gets torn apart, you get no money for it, and all you can do to replace is basically get Jeff Hendrick on a free transfer, and you look where Reading have ended up, like back in League One, losing at home to whoever Reading lost at home to at the Wigan Peterborough. So it's not just let's break it, take the 6-point deduction and move on. That's not, it's not how it works. I think a lot of people think it is. I'm just sort of seeing that on our message board, people saying, well, it's only 6 points, and it ain't.
Just quickly then, going on to Cardiff, Doug, I don't know, what changes would you make?
It's hard to say because obviously we've still got a few days to potentially get somebody in. But like we've said, that person isn't going to come in and be fit. So they probably won't even start. But for me, we've got to go 5 at the back, be tighter, just like pack the midfield, and maybe just put Armstrong up with Dykes, play like a 5-3-2, keep them two up there, try and keep Cardiff occupied with a bit of counter-attacking football if we can, but it's just not lose 4-0 again. Even if we lose 1-0, okay, we know we have got a makeshift team at the minute. You just take a 1-0, it's much better than a 4-0.
Anything else, yeah. Jack, would you, or Clive, anything else to add?
Yeah, I mean, pack it like you said, you're just way too open on Saturday, so you can't be like that again. Whatever you do, like, try and at least, I think, was it Jack said earlier, a three-man midfield, you just try and clog that space, because your centre backs aren't very good. You can't expose them the way they were on Saturday. And, you know, maybe Willock responds to being left out and you get Willock and Chair in there and you try and get them playing close together. Because when they did play at Oxford, Chair was very extreme wide right and Willock was very extreme wide left. And what did both... What did Warburton and Beale do to get the best out of them? You play them close together. So hope that Willock's responded and try and do that. Chair and Willock with Dykes, you know, and a three and... in front, and then Armstrong on as a sort of impact setup, but you can't be as open as you were on Saturday. You've got to at least be professional about it. Saturday was unprofessional. The setup, like I've said, was the maddest thing I've ever seen. It was like we'd never heard of Watford or Valerian Ismail or any of them. So you've got to be more professional and try and clog it a little bit more than that.
Yeah, I think definitely got to play three at the back, in my opinion, whether that means pushing Kakai to right centre back, which some people are saying that's his best position, potentially. You've got Larkesh, maybe he can come in at left wing back. You put Powell in midfield to clog the midfield, to drop Dizel, you know, field Duke McKenna, or you put Chair in there. It's difficult because if they can get a centre back, you'd think he's just going to go straight in, don't you? I mean, regardless of fitness. It's a bit desperate. You can't go Fox and Gubbins again. It's got to change somehow. Do you sacrifice Field as a midfielder and put him as centre back in the middle or left side of centre back just to like spare a Gubbins? You know, Fox, Field, and you know, Kakai. I mean, it's paper thin. It's dreadful, whatever way you look at it. And I think, you know, you've got people like Adoma probably on still fairly decent money. I wouldn't trust him to play right wing back or right back. His legs have gone. No, like,
but his legs had gone, Jack. I remember we lost at Sheffield United at the end of the Warburton season. We lost 1-0 at Sheffield United. Adoma played in front of me. I was like, he's gone. Like, nice. It was a nice story and we had some good times.
Yeah.
1-year contract at the end. Then give him a 2-year contract. His legs have been gone for 2 years. And this is what I was saying earlier about when you're having to give Colback or Steve Cook or Morgan Fox 2- and 3-year deals just to get them here. Because every other footballer is looking at QPR at the minute and their agents and whatever and thinking, absolutely no fucking way, I'm not going anywhere near that place. So just to get them in, you're having to do 2- and 3-year deals for people that don't, you're just storing up problems for a few.
Is on Colback, is he anywhere close, do you think, to being at least on the bench?
Well, I think you're right. I think they'll get so desperate. I know he made a big thing out of sports science and it's a long season and whatever. I think they're going to get so desperate that people like that and whoever they do sign at centre-back is just going to have to go straight in, like, for better or like whatever happens to them. What choice do we have? You know, are we going to just play like that on Saturday again?
It does feel McLaren's team of men 2.0, doesn't it?
We at least we had the money to go and get those four loans at that point. We don't even have that now. It's like, I honestly don't know how they get out of this.
What we can't do is not concede early. I think the team crumbles every, you know, once, if we can get to sort of half-time, 35, 40 minutes, nil-nil, I feel like it. Some of these players we're talking about will grow into the game a bit more. Your Willicks, your Chairs, your Richards, but you go 1-0, 2-0 down after 10, 20 minutes. These players they won't like it. We already know they don't like it. So they're not just going to pick us back up again. I know we did it at West Brom once, but that was probably a one-off fluke.
It's been a big theme since he came in. We were talking before we came on, weren't we? Goals in the first 10 minutes. It's happened like, what, 8, 9, 10 times in his 14 games. Like goals after a minute, 2 minutes, 4 minutes, 6 minutes. Like, let's just see if we can
have it.
You said let's get to half time. I mean, let's see if we can get the time into double figures at Cardiff. That would be significant progress.
That would be. All right, lads, we'll end it there. Thanks for coming on and everyone for listening. And we'll be back again next week. Hopefully, we can try and have something positive. We'll try.
Oh dear.
But yeah, let's hope we get a good result Saturday. Yours.
You are.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.